Pickaxe.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome back to The Review of Death, your fortnightly home for Doctor Who news and reviews. I didn't say that quite right. It should have been The Review of Death, a Doctor Who podcast.
It chops and changes every week.
Does it? I try to get it quite...
There's a slight variation
each time.
Is there
a variation in the theme? But yeah, this is a Doctor Who podcast, in case you hadn't guessed. Yeah. And this is Billy Garrett John.
Hello.
I'm Matthew Toffolo. And we're talking about the Ark of Infinity today.
We are. And I'm looking forward to talking about it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have an overwhelmingly terrible experience with it.
Yeah.
Which I wasn't sort of expecting.
Oh, okay,
but,
good.
But, you know, it's not brilliant.
Yeah.
But we'll get on to that.
Yeah.
You know, it might surprise you. It might shock you, some of the things we
have to consider spending the patron money on a trip to Amsterdam.
Yes.
And filming live at the Red Light District.
Yeah, but they would have chucked us out. Because we would have been the weirdos in that scenario.
Yeah.
But
Going up to some poor prostitute and saying, so now, do you realise that Peter Davison ran around the canals near here with Rice Krispies stuck to his face?
Were you based around here at any point in 1983, maybe, 1982? We'll run through some news, because obviously quite a bit of stuff has happened since we last recorded. Very sadly, of course, we'll talk about it at the top of the show.
Yeah.
Bernard Cribbins has passed away.
I couldn't believe it. I don't know how I found out. I don't know if it was Johnny who told me, but devastated.
Unbelievable.
Just what a loss.
One of those people that when they're gone, you're like, I didn't consider there would be another side of this where they're not around, you know, they're just so omnipotent in British pop culture.
Yeah.
A bit like Olivia Newton-John yesterday. They're just like, they're always there.
Yeah, you just, it's crazy.
But obviously, Wilf in Doctor Who, Tom Campbell in the Peter Cushing movies.
Yeah.
I've got a few highlights. Right Said Fred.
Right Said Fred, of course,
One of the most brilliant songs ever written. The Carry On movies, in like three Carry On movies.
Yeah.
The Wombles,
of course,
obviously.
Yeah.
The Railway Children.
Yeah.
It's just kind of British culture.
Yeah.
Wrapped up in one bloke.
Yes.
Faulty Towers.
Oh God, yes, he's so good in that episode.
And 114 episodes of Jack and Ori.
Wow.
What a dude.
So has he got the record for the most episodes of Jack and Ori?
I think if he doesn't still have it, at some point he did have the record.
Yeah, because I think I saw a BBC archive thing of him being interviewed in, I want to say, 1991 on Blue Peter. I think at that point he'd done the most readings.
Had the record, and then even before that, after that, he did Old Jack's Boat. Was that what it was called? It was the kids'
that
show
does ring
on
a bell.
CBBC.
Yeah.
He was still doing stuff.
Yeah.
Obviously still doing stuff, because he was in Bristol weeks ago filming for the 60th anniversary.
Crazy.
And he's not there anymore.
No.
We won't go into that because it's sort of moot. You know, we don't know what his involvement is in it.
No.
But what a legend.
Yeah.
And I think we should probably name Agador Bernard.
Oh, Bernard.
In tribute.
Oh, bless him.
So Bernard the Agador.
Bernard the Agador.
Yeah,
that's really sad. I mean, I imagine, because I know a lot of people were talking about Doctor Who, I think it's quite sweet that's going to be his last on-screen role. And I imagine we can expect that there will be some wonderful tribute at the end. Probably more than just in memory of. Mm. Think about what they did with Liz Sladen when they had like an oldly programme, I think, didn't they, almost dedicated
Absolutely,
to
yeah.
it? So I imagine they'd probably do like a little thing like that.
Mm.
But it was nice to see different people speaking about him. David and Catherine Tate did a little interview. And so did Sylvia, Donna's...
Oh, really?
I forget the actress's name. But yeah, it was, yeah, it's just crazy. You know, we just had the films come out in 4K, out, yeah. And then of course he was back in Doctor Who proper.
Yeah.
Just
it's
bonkers.
It's nice when stuff comes out, because we've seen it with the collection sets, that things get reappraised. And I think a lot of people were sort of saying in the days before he passed away, because the set had just come out, as you said, people were going, he's brilliant in that
he's
film.
He's so good in that film.
He really holds it.
He's so good.
He holds the comedic element, but he still reacts when he needs to. And, you know, he's fantastic.
Didn't you ask me, didn't you say, oh, who do you prefer, Ian or,
or Tom
Campbell? Tom Campbell, because he's funny, but he's more grounded in a way that Roy Castle isn't. And I think that's the wonderful thing about Bernard.
He
knew exactly how to pitch things. Mm-hmm. And it was lovely seeing all the stuff from, like, John Sim posted a lovely thing on Instagram. Did you see that?
Yeah.
What he said about after every take, he'd be like, oh, you horrible bugger. Brilliant.
He's fab. But yeah, gutted. Really sad.
So, yeah, rest in peace, Bernard.
R.I.P. Bernard. In a slight... It's difficult to segue into anything else after that, but the Dalek Illustrated book is coming out, and that looks quite nice.
It does look quite nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not something that I would probably buy.
When was the last time you bought a Doctor Who book? Go on.
I bought one on...
Not one that was published...
Sunday.
Before 2010.
Oh shit. No. That Ace book?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah, I've got that too. I think that might have been my last one as well.
Yeah.
Oh, and the Target books. I think I got the Target storybook was the last one.
Okay.
I bought.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I think it was the Ace book for me.
Mm.
I don't think...
Did anybody buy any of the Jodie books? Are they any good? Let us know.
Yeah, they only did a bit. Three, didn't they?
Yeah, three. You kind of get the impression at that point, it's like, what's going on?
Yeah.
That was the first indicator for me, like, subconsciously, I thought, this isn't normal.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
We'll get on to that in a bit. The Dalek Illustrated book looks nice.
Yeah, I think that's the sort of thing, I might buy it for my nephew.
Yeah.
Because he is, you know, we've been talking about his foreign, he watched his first Jodie Whittaker episode the other day.
What did he think?
He watched War of the Sontarans. He really enjoyed it. He thought the Sontarans were good, and he thought she was good.
Good to hear.
Yeah, so he's been enjoying it. He's seen all the Doctors now, like a story from all of the Doctors, except for Hartnell.
Yeah, it's difficult with Hartnell.
Hartnell's a
just because of the pacing.
Yeah, because he was like, oh, I want to watch the Aztecs. And I was like, the Aztecs is a great story, but I don't know if it would necessarily grip you.
I think that's the one I'd show
you think?
Someone. Either that or, I mean, The Rescue's only two episodes.
I said The Rescue because of the shortness of it.
But there's not a lot to it.
There's not a lot of,
If he's watched The Sea Devils, he can watch the Aztecs.
Yeah, he probably
I think The Sea Devils drags in places more than the Aztecs in some respects.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so he hasn't seen a Hartnell, and he's not seen a Tennant, and he's not seen a Matt Smith, and he's not seen a Peter Capaldi.
Okay. Only the good ones, then.
Only the good ones, but he loved Christopher Eccleston. Christopher Eccleston was just, he loved him. But Pertwee is still his doctor.
Yeah.
And he watched Brain of Morbius the other day. That went down well.
How did the condo gut splatter go down?
Didn't really bother him.
No?
Yeah, Johnny was worried. Jonathan was like, that's their dad. My brother. Jonathan was like... is that going to be too much, too visceral for them? I don't think they're... Violence and, like, gory stuff like that, I don't think bothers them so much.
I don't think it bothers kids at all these days. Like, I was in a girls, an all-girls private school for 6 months. And some of the...
Not,
just, like,
in the
lurking in the bushes for a TV show. And they watch Squid Games, and they're, like, 12, 11, 12, and it doesn't faze them in the slightest.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think violence compared to, like, something more... monstrous.
Yeah, because that's the make-believe. That's almost like Tom and Jerry, like, you know, when Tom runs through a Venetian blind and gets split into a thousand pieces.
Yeah.
It's like, that's so violent that, you know, it's kind of desensitized to you. And I think at that age, you know, I was playing Call of Duty World at War at their age with my cousin, or maybe I was slightly older, and Jibs get... you know, blasted off of people in that game. It's sort of like...
And likewise, like, we were playing, like, Resident Evil and stuff when like, seven.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a different world, but he did watch... So we went on holiday for 4 days.
Yeah.
We went to the Gower, And we took some Doctor Who. That was his main thing. He was like, are we going to watch some Doctor Who while we're on holiday? So we're like, okay, we'll bring some DVDs. So for some reason, the stories that he picked were Silver Nemesis.
Good. Yes. Yeah.
The Three Doctors.
Cool.
And Warriors of the Deep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we watched Silver Nemesis first. Mm-hmm. And he was like, that's okay. You enjoyed it.
Like you're offering them to this, you know, this child prince, and this one was acceptable.
Then we watched.
They go like that, or like that, if you like something. Yeah.
Or like that in the middle. And then Warriors of the Deep, he loved it.
Yeah, you would, wouldn't you?
And I was like, and I said to Johnny, and Johnny was like, why does he like this story so much?
It's because.
And I said, it's monsters, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's monsters, and
they don't see the shitness that we see as adults.
No, and it's underwater, and it's...
Yeah,
you know,
it's like sea bases and stuff.
And it's really well-designed, and gunfights, yeah. And
Marcello, the youngest, was like, oh, I prefer these sea devils. They've got really cool armour.
Yeah.
We were watching it with Uncle Mario, who just pissed himself throughout the whole thing. At the minute the Silurians turned up, which is obviously like 5 minutes into the episode, he just went,
he'd really laugh, but that's
he
it.
He was just laughing. He was just like, oh God, here they are wobbling
we
about.
We should get a Toffolo family audio commentary. Yeah.
So that was that. And then Three Doctors, he just went, oh, that was excellent.
Yeah.
He said that was the best one. Out of the ones we've watched, Three Doctors was the best. Then Warriors of the Deep. He said, and then Silver Nemesis, he wasn't quite so keen on.
Oh, never mind.
But
he's dead to me.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Have you seen Chris Marshall's quote in the press?
No.
So obviously Chris Marshall, who is like Schrodinger's doctor.
Yes.
Until he becomes the doctor, he's just either always the doctor or never the doctor.
He's like the present day David Burton, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
He needs to put the new Doctor Who
on his car. Well, he would if he'd ever seen Doctor Who. Because the quote from the paper that they asked him, you know, you were linked to the Doctor Who role maybe or something. And he said, if I'd been approached to audition for a show at the vanguard of TV for the last 50 years, I'd at least have done my research, but I've never seen an episode of Doctor Who.
Wow.
This is like the meme gets deeper. It's like he's the Doctor. He's so the Doctor. He's definitely the Doctor. Everybody he's auditioned, he's going to get announced. And yet he has never even watched Doctor Who.
Oh, dear. Well, we can't have that.
No.
We know that. You know, if you haven't watched an episode of Doctor Who, you can't be the Doctor.
Yeah, you're right.
People
off.
Are like
you're
on
right
Twitter.
Off. Unbelievable. And he mentions that he left Death in Paradise the same time Capaldi left Doctor Who, so people put two and two together and made five.
Ah.
So there we go. Sadly, we'll never see Chris Marshall as Doctor Who.
Well, you never know. You never know. Just because he said that doesn't mean that someone in the future might not go. You know what?
Don't worry about it, Chris. I'm not that fussed. Neil Patrick Harris did an interview that got some attention.
With Whoopi Goldberg, wasn't it?
Yes. Hmm. And he said in that interview, and this is the full quote. Now, it's amazing how little he speaks about it.
Yes.
And the length of the articles and the absolutes in which they're talked about in the headlines. Yeah. Right? So it's basically, it's two sentences. I got to meet and interact with him a bit, and he's glorious. I mean, we can touch on that, but he'll be the first gay doctor, which is going to be super cool, a sexier doctor. That's literally all he said on the matter.
Yeah.
Now, okay, I mean, we'll talk about the fact he's interacted with him.
Yeah.
I guess that means he's in the 60th or involved in the 60th in some way.
Yeah, I think probably so, because there was a leak that suggested that he was going to be in the 60th.
Oh, was there?
And it was a leak so severe that it was on Gallifrey base that the BBC apparently, or Bad Wolf or whoever, got in contact with Gallifrey base and told them to take it down.
Really?
Because the leak had come from someone within who should not have been leaking stuff.
Or it was on a document so secure that it literally could have only been gained through nefarious means or something.
Yeah.
They were like, that's not public information. I've never heard of them trying to do that before.
I'm sure that's what happened. Maybe I've read that wrong, but I read it and I thought, ooh.
Yeah, I mean, should we talk about the centenary? Or the lack of what we can talk about to do
with
the centenary?
I got confused then. I was like, wait, what's the centenary? Yeah, that's the Jodie Whittaker one.
Yeah, that's
sorry, I forget that that's like coming out.
The one that's in like 2 months or something.
Oh God, is that soon, isn't it?
I think it's something like 60 plus days until it's supposed to come out.
Wow.
Now, a lot has been made of the fact that we don't know anything.
Yes.
Which I think some of that criticism or comment is totally, you know, like don't want to say acceptable, but I get it, you know? Yeah. Some of it just seems like people bashing the show, whatever. Yeah. I am perplexed and have been consistently perplexed since we found out there was going to be a Centenary and at the end of Legend of the Sea Devils.
Yeah.
That we have no title for it.
Yeah.
I think that's still...
It's really weird.
Bizarre. And I think it might be quite a good indicator of how little communication or how little promotion is actually done, that something which we always get and we always know, you know, further in advance than we'd get screenshots or a synopsis or, you know, whatever, or a listing on the Radio Times or a press release from the BBC Press Office website, we'd at least know the title.
Yeah.
And it's so odd. That's
the barest minimum, I
think. It's so odd that we didn't get it at the end of Legend of the Sea Devils. But it's like, if that fell through the cracks, that's how much attention that's being paid to the promotion of the show.
Yeah.
That we haven't had that and we still don't have that.
I mean, I don't want to speak out of turn.
Mm-hmm.
And I was having this conversation with Jonathan because we were talking about the fact that SFX, did they approach the BBC and say, can we get something?
They tried to do something for the newest issue.
Yeah.
And they weren't granted access in time.
Right.
I think. And they're going to try and get something out for the one after that.
Okay. Oh, so it wasn't like the BBC were like, no.
I don't know.
No.
I don't know who said no.
Yeah.
And I don't know the lack of
Because I traction. Almost, I feel like, I do feel a bit, it does feel a bit like the BBC are like, well, we've made this thing.
Mm.
And it has to go out, and yeah, it's going to air, but that's the end of something. Mm. We've got this big, shiny new thing coming afterwards, and that's what we're really interested in. So, you know, we've just sort of, it'll come out, kind of like within the 80s, you know, season 26 just aired, and, you know, they didn't really put any trailers behind it and anything. Well, that's not me saying that they're not going to put trailers out, but I think that they're not necessarily giving as much of a fanfare to it, because they probably think, well, you know, this era hasn't been a highlight. It's not like when David Tennant left or when Matt Smith left and it was a big deal. You know, this doesn't feel like a big public big deal.
No.
You know.
No.
Fans of that period, it's a big deal to them. But en masse, you know, it's just another episode of Doctor Who.
We've spoken about it before, about the way that Doctor Who's been promoted over the last couple of years. And I think it sort of started, with the exception of the 50th anniversary and with Regenerations or the odd special.
Yeah.
Doctor Who, for a while, has been promoted and touted within the BBC like a Call the Midwife, like it's on the same level.
Yeah.
Like it's got the same cultural cachet or relevance. Mm. As something like Call the Midwife or any other BBC drama, like Death in Paradise or whatever. And I think, frankly, that Doctor Who isn't at that level.
No.
I think Doctor Who, as a phenomenon, is much bigger.
Yeah.
But has not been put on that pedestal.
No.
The way that maybe Russell pushed for it to be put on that pedestal. Or when there was a dedicated brand manager. I don't know if there still is, but I'm not sure that it looks like there is, as there had been previously with Edward Russell.
Yeah.
So what I, you know, as fans, I think we take it personally, and I think we put on that label of the BBC just want to go, yeah, well, it'll come out when it comes out.
Yeah.
But not a lot of stuff that's going on around the centenary that's going to come out around the same time has also been talked about.
Yeah, that's true.
And generally, when you look at the lead time,
it's usually like the month before, isn't
it? That, yeah. I think it's that Doctor Who is just like any other show and the fact that it's being treated as such. But also on top of that, I totally understand and I totally agree that there is an apathy, it seems, from the production team, the incumbent team, towards talking about the show or promoting it in any way.
Yeah.
Chris Chibnall has himself said it's his least favourite part of the job and that he doesn't enjoy
it. Yeah, it's funny to say that. Yeah.
And but you don't need to be a showman like a...
No,
J&T
no.
or turning up like Russell would on BBC Breakfast.
On the one show or anything.
If you don't
like
want
that.
To do that, that's cool. But it's like, have somebody who can do that.
Yeah.
Or let the cast talk about it a bit more.
Yeah.
Everybody mentions Dan the Plasterer, which doesn't even get brought up. You know, it's like he came up with something in that moment just for the sake of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Shit. Actually, he's unemployed, isn't he? When we see him in Flux.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So maybe he literally came up with that on the spot. As, yeah. You know, oh, I've got to give him something. I'm a plasterer. I think there is definitely... I don't want to say something afoot because it sounds sort of nefarious.
But yeah.
There's definitely a hesitance to promote the show.
Yeah.
From the Chibnall, because, the Chip Chibnall.
Yeah, because I guess the thing is, as of Christmas, because we assume that the first special with David Tennant will air Christmas-ish time, whether it's Christmas Day or New Year's Day. Mm. And that is going to be the start of a year's worth of celebrations, be it three specials that are spread across the year, additional things that we're not even privy to yet, and potentially even, you know, the beginning of Shooty's first season. We don't know. But I guess they're sort of like, well, you know, and everything's going to change. The logo will probably be different and the music will be different and everything will look different and all, you know. And they're probably thinking, well, what's the point in making such a big deal about this?
I don't think, but you think about going from the specials year to Matt Smith.
Yeah.
It was still treated, it was still like, okay, we're coming to the, I get that it was a really big thing.
Yeah.
And it was a really big event, David Tennant.
People
like David Tennant. But yeah, I mean, it was a big, it felt like a national event. You
it
know?
Did, it
I
did.
I was in Wales over New Year, and there was a telly in this like hotel commune type deal, and everybody was gathered around it watching David Tennant regenerate.
Holy shit.
It was like a room of at least a dozen people.
Wow.
Mainly kids all sort of sat on the floor.
Yeah.
And David Tennant regenerating and me trying to hold back
the tears.
And you're like, no one's going to see me cry doing this. Yeah. But, you know, there were people who were pretty upset. But when it came to Matt Smith's era, the next year, months later, it was still sort of bumped.
It was bumped. Yeah, that's
talked
true.
About.
Yeah, because that came out, I'm trying to think. So the New Year's Day, wasn't it, when David Tennant regenerated?
Mm.
And then I guess it was the spring, wasn't it? So what, April maybe? When Matt Smith came out?
Came out, yeah.
And I guess like so that's what, 4 months, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And then, what is it, if it's October, November, December, so it's only a couple of months. Maybe it's that, I don't know. I don't know.
It is
what it is.
It's noticeable because we know it's coming up.
Yeah.
And we don't know a lot about it.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's necessarily sort of as big a deal as people are making
it. Yeah,
so
I don't know.
Obviously, we're going to see a marked increase and a marked improvement, I think, in the way the show is promoted.
Yes, oh, definitely. And without a shadow of a doubt.
That will be obvious.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with it at the moment. It's just sort of,
I mean, I guess
conspicuous by its absence.
Yeah, and the trouble is, you compare it to all the stuff that's been going on with what should be, Doctor Who should be the equivalent of, like the Marvel stuff and the Star Wars stuff and all that kind of thing. And you think, well, you know, they had San Diego Comic-Con panels and where was Doctor Who at San Diego Comic-Con?
Mm.
Well, again, you know, why would they do a San Diego Comic-Con panel for this year? It makes more sense for them to do it next year or when Shooty is about to come in and get him at San Diego Comic-Con and say, oh, we're going to show you a teaser from the next special. I mean, they might not even do it for next year. It might be the year after when Shooty is properly the incumbent Doctor.
Yeah.
I
don't think that having a panel at San Diego really means anything anymore.
See, I kind of think it's
nice to have a presence there.
Yeah.
But if you're using that as a measuring stick of how popular the show is, or like, I know it's a nerd mecca, but unless they are going to screen something exclusive, and even then people will get pissed off that they weren't in the room for it. Do you remember when there was a trailer shown?
Yeah.
And it was it the 50th trailer or something?
It might have been, or something like that.
It was something like that. And people were really pissed off that they didn't see it.
Yeah.
Because obviously of the time difference in the States. I don't know if they do something like that.
Mm.
But a panel maybe. But I don't think Doctor Who needs to turn up at Comic-Con every year. No. Why not turn up at the do it at the London one? Why does it have to be San Diego?
Because it's the big one. It's the big one.
Yeah.
It's so huge.
I know.
You know, people stay up to like God knows what o'clock to follow the coverage.
Do they?
Things. Yeah.
I see. I haven't seen that side of it. So.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, people stay up till midnight to wait for things to go on the BBC Twitter that never turn up. So fair enough.
That's TV Zone.
Let's talk about something else incredibly controversial, Matt.
What's that then?
So apparently some action figures have been announced.
Oh boy.
So what have we got? What have we got coming out?
So we've got 4 new sets coming to B&M whenever B&M decide to release them.
Okay.
And I think that was actually mentioned in the press release.
Yeah.
It was sort of said, you know, they will be out when...
When we can be bothered.
When B&M can be asked to put them on the shelves. But I imagine it'll be fairly soon because that's why they've given the press release out. But so it's 4 new sets. The Eighth Doctor set, which is 3 8th Doctors. The David Tennant set, which is 3 10th Doctors of varying outfits.
Quality. Outfits, yeah.
And the 2 History of the Daleks sets, which is the 2nd Planet of the Daleks set, which people will be very pleased to hear about because they were annoyed that last year we didn't get the Supreme Dalek. So we got a nice Supreme Dalek,
yeah.
Got an Invisible Dalek, which is
great.
That's really cool, that Invisible Dalek. And then the 2nd set is Death of the Daleks, which are, you know, stunning Daleks. Anyway, and the 8th Doctor set, that's pretty good. The TV movie Paul McGann is a really nice repaint. The Dark Eyes one is cool. He's got his little handbag. And then the Night of the Doctor one, that's another nice repaint. That's a good one because that was so hard to get. Singular release.
I do like it when they do that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the only times the Supreme Daleks come out was the original box set and then the SFX.
It never came out as an SFX one.
Did
it
not?
It was talked about, but it never...
Okay.
It never ended up
So that's
up
the only time it's ever come out.
This is the first time since 2008.
And you get a whole other Dalek.
And you get a whole other
Dalek.
So that's really good. And the same really with the Death of the Daleks set.
Mm.
Unless you had, like, the one with the orange dome lights, that was a Forbidden Planet exclusive.
I got that.
Did you get that one?
That came with a
John Pertwee. And then the other one was like a sound effects one. But again, they were hard to get. They weren't easy to get hold of. Mm. So this is good. Mm. The 10th Doctor stuff, I mean, I'm sure people have said their piece on Twitter by now anyway.
Because it's the 10th Doctor from the wedding of Sarah Jane Smith, isn't it?
Yes. Of all stories.
Mm.
He hasn't got his pinstripes.
Yeah, it's funny that, isn't it?
It is a bit weird, but you'll hear all about this in my reviews, which will be coming out. Actually, some of them might be out by the time you hear this.
Wow! He's had them for ages.
I literally got them the weekend of San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah,
which is the 22nd of June. July?
And you
July. I should know. It was the weekend Dad died, so I should know when it was.
Damn! because you spoke to me about the 10th Doctor one ahead of time.
I did, yeah.
And sort of said people might be a bit...
Yeah.
What's the reaction been from what you've seen? Is it kind of what you expected, or...?
It is, really. I think people were just kind of like, oh, you know. And I was a bit surprised, to be honest. You know, I thought that it wouldn't just be 3 variations of the same character. I thought it would be, you know, the Doctor and a monster or something. So I was surprised, and obviously we've got like this comic book version. He's like on the cover of one of Will Brooks's Titan comics.
Which was that?
The raggedy
one. I was wondering where that was.
Yeah, because when I got my samples, I was like, oh, who the fuck are you? What story are you from? And then I read the back of the box. It was like from the Comic Adventures.
Why not do a 60th anniversary one before it even comes out? You could.
Well, I guess by the time that these went into production, all that stuff wasn't known about. But yeah, I think it's just there's been big budget cuts for this year, and I imagine that because last year we had a lot of masses of new tooling,
and
stuff.
I think that's by comparison.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem.
That might be what people are kind of...
Yeah, I guess people, you know, you do 1 year of, like, amazing, lots of new things, and then people just sort of expect that all the time, which obviously isn't the reality of it.
Yeah.
But I imagine that, you know, maybe this is, like, some sort of a buffer year, and perhaps next year we might start getting to see a few more bits of new tooling and stuff. So.
Well, it would make sense.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
But there we go.
But we might be speaking to someone soon who,
yeah, you know, fingers crossed, we'll be getting Al on the podcast, yeah, and we'll be talking to him about all things Doctor Who.
So we'll put a thing out if anybody wants to ask Al any questions about, yeah, Doctor Who action figures and the toy line in general, then we can get the skinny on it from him. Yeah. It should be really interesting. Well, that's just about it in terms of Doctor Who news.
Yeah.
Just about everything covered.
There's one other thing.
Go on.
Season 20, the collection set. That's coming out next year.
Okay.
You've looked at me like I've said something terrible.
Are people supposed to know that?
Did you not see all this on Twitter?
No, no.
Okay, so...
There's been a leak.
Sorry, Chris. There's been a leak that there was filming in Amsterdam for, yeah, the story we're talking about after the break. They were filming in Amsterdam doing some sort of a special feature. I didn't read the whole thing, but I think they wanted like fans from Holland and over there to...
Weigh in on it.
And yeah, come in and do some stuff. And of course... because people can't keep their gobs shut, they were like, oh, we did this thing and it's coming out next year.
Yeah.
And it's like, why would you do that? Why would you post it on Reddit and then share it on Twitter and all this kind of stuff? And then why would some asshole on a podcast then announce it to all the people who didn't know, like his co-host who didn't have a clue then?
Well, you know.
So, but it makes sense because season 20 is the big anniversary season and it's the big anniversary year next year.
I mean... it feels like season 20 is the box set that's the next one. That's the next one for ages.
Well, I got a funny feeling that this Amsterdam stuff was supposed to be shot...
yeah, over COVID.
Over COVID, wasn't it? Like March. Yeah. And then obviously COVID happened. I guess people's schedules and stuff haven't allowed for that to happen. Mm-hmm. But it makes sense to release it next year rather than before that because, you know, you've got the Five Doctors and, you know...
oh, a nice thick re-edit of the Five Doctors.
And all the film sequences, I think, exist in HD.
Yeah.
Well, the negatives exist to that's gonna be transferred to HD.
Really nice.
So that'll be really cool.
Yeah. Ever wanted to see a Cyberman beheaded in HD?
Yeah.
You're going to get your opportunity.
We'll be vomited.
I've got a great story that I can tell you that I got told firsthand by Stuart Fell.
Oh, yeah.
When he gets... one of the Cybermen gets their arms lopped off.
Yeah.
By the Rastamoria robot.
Yeah.
And there was a chemical smoke that was added to his injury, to his stump, his cyber stump. And the chemical smoke got into his mask.
Ooh.
And he was trying to, he was acting. Mm. I'm a dying Cyberman, and I'm literally also dying.
So that sick wasn't...
yeah, that wasn't cyber. I should have asked him about the cyber milk.
Yeah.
It's such a bizarre, it's odd when you see it, isn't it? Every time it happens, I'm like... Why did this never happen again? Because it kind of looks cool.
It does look cool.
But also the noise they make as well. They sound like pigs.
I always thought it sounded like... because there's a cyber leader who gets who does the vomiting.
Yes.
And when it happens, before he's sick, he makes a noise. And it sounds like he's saying mummy.
Oh, yeah.
And I've always thought it. So I like to think that in his like dying moments, some of that humanity came back.
I just saw a cyber controller in an apron rocking a tiny cyber leader.
I know. The little one. Maybe that was it. Maybe the cyber controller was just pregnant in Attack of the Cybermen.
That's how they're born, everybody.
Yeah.
Forget the cyber conversion thing. Where does it come out of? His head? Big crowns. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's another Cyberman crowning out of his...
It's an egg
in the head.
He's got one brewing inside and then it just goes...
oh, poor Michael Kilgariff. Oh. Bless him. If you notice in that episode of Tackle Cyberman, there's a massive cut in it.
Right.
Where Matt...
yes!
deleted some stuff from the Michael Kilgariff segment. And obviously the cyber... heads for the costumes at the time are four bolts.
Yeah.
And there was literally, wasn't even enough time to unscrew the bolts. So some floor manager or something literally ripped the helmet off of his head. And he was like kind of...
Jesus Christ. Now I put on my cyber leader helmet for the first time the other day.
Yeah.
And how he would have ripped that off.
Yeah,
I know. Got a big head.
I mean, he's smaller anyway, but I mean... my God.
That's
and the way you have to put them on is you have to turn your head sideways first. Is this how you put yours on? Maybe David Banks' head is bigger than yours.
Well, his head probably is bigger than mine, but I mean, I just put it on and then got Johnny to screw it in.
afterwards. No, so he said you have to put it on sideways like that.
Oh, I'll have to try that. I'll have a go.
You got that. And his nose is like that the entire time. Oh my God.
I wasn't that bad.
I don't want to be a Cyberman anymore.
No, is that completely destroyed?
Yeah. He told me enough horror stories about panic attacks.
I did think that. I put it on, and like we didn't even screw it in properly. Yeah. And I thought, imagine being stuck in this.
And knowing that it's going to take a while for someone. Yeah.
Or you just go mad.
And sweating into your boots and having to put a hairdryer into them, he said, at the end of every recording.
Oh, really?
Just blast your shoes and socks with a hairdryer. Why do people put themselves through it?
Well,
for our entertainment. Yeah, that's bloody it. Worth it. I'll tell you
really
that.
It's really good. Yeah. So that's season 20. On which note, we're gonna go into season 20.
Let's
now.
Talk about the first episode. Of season 20.
Hello, welcome back. We're talking about the Arc of Infinity today. I don't know why I put my notes away. I need them.
How did you feel about this going into it? What was your last impression of watching The Arc of Infinity?
I honestly have never found any issue with The Arc of Infinity.
No.
I've always thought it's fine.
Yeah.
And honestly, when you posted that poll, I thought to myself, God, I hope The Arc of Infinity wins. And I actually almost tweeted about it. Yeah. And I thought, if I tweet about
it
you bastards at home will be like, oh no, we'll rig it so he's got to watch The Horns of Nyman.
Yeah, the other ones were The Curse of the Black Spot and The Horns of Nyman.
So, honestly, I'm very grateful that I didn't have to subject myself to either of those stories.
Because I kind of got the impression when people saw that we were going to do it, that it's really not liked, that it's
sort
of...
Well, this is what I don't understand.
It's like D-tier Doctor Who.
Yeah, people really shit on this one, and I don't think it's that bad. I mean, it's got an element of 80s Doctor Who that we always criticise it for.
Yeah.
Like Gallifrey, for instance, feels very 80s.
Oh, yeah.
And it is, you know, you cannot compare it to the sumptuous designs of Roger Murray Leach and The Deadly Assassin.
No. It's got the same problem that The Invasion of Time has, which is very long corridors and nothing kind of happening in them.
Yeah, like at least here's a lamp, here's a sofa.
Yeah.
It's like a bloody waiting room.
It looks like an 80s like insurance office, like the brown marble feature walls and stuff. But it's, at least in The Deadly Assassin, it's populated.
Yes.
Like there's comings and goings. There's a couple of scenes where like Nyssa sat down with Damon and...
in like a Time Lord cafe.
Yeah, and there's somebody having lunch behind them or something. And it's
and
odd.
It did make me laugh. All of their caps.
Yeah.
None of them fit any of the actors. No. They're all like a bit misshapen.
Bruce's one is sort of like hovering above his
headline. The Castellans does not fit him at all. I think they sort that out by the time of the Five Doctors.
How do you feel generally about going back to Gallifrey? Because so much of it is set on Gallifrey. And I know that people generally aren't a fan of going to Gallifrey.
I don't mind.
No.
I think it's always quite nice to go back to Gallifrey and gleam a little bit more about the Doctor's origins. Do we gleam an awful lot from this story?
No, it's sort of the Gallifrey of the 70s. And it doesn't really...
Because it's not like he
feels particularly grandiose. And...
Yeah, like at least with The Deadly Assassin, you know, you get Runcible the Fatuous, who is like, okay, that was someone that he was at school with. And you get a bit of like, oh, you know, wasn't there some sort of scandal or something?
Yeah.
And so you get like, oh, that's something.
And even in the settings, like the Panopticon, there isn't like a grand...
Yeah, there's no Panopticon in this story.
Or whatever, you know.
A shit boardroom with a couple of chairs at the
back. It is. And, you know, they just sort of... lined up against this wall and having very dour meetings.
Yeah.
Like, there's no fanfare when anybody walks into a room. There's no sort of impression that this is a higher level of society. Or
no.
Whatever. You know,
it just feels like old fussy gits.
Yeah.
It's quite funny because growing up, this was a story that I didn't see for quite a while. And we had a book... The Key to Time book. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that one? Peter Haining, I think it was. And that went up to... It categorised every month of Doctor Who from 1963 to 1983, I guess, just as Colin was about to come in. And there was a picture of Peter with the Time Lords in the Arc of Infinity. And I always thought, oh, wow, that's really cool. You know, there's another Time Lord story. And then, you know, you watch it now and you think, it's just...
It's a backdrop to the story. Yeah, you know, yeah. It's a backdrop to what's going on.
Yeah, and like Damon, this annoys me.
Yeah,
because every time I watch the story, I don't know how many times I've seen this bloody episode. Damon turns up, and I think, are we supposed to know this guy?
Yeah,
has he been in another story?
It's and always like, meek technicians.
Yeah,
who are easy fodder for people to get, you know, killed and murdered. Dour sort of politician types and grunting guards.
Yeah,
but yeah. I think because Damon looks like everybody else on Gallifrey that we've ever met.
Yeah.
White, 6 foot something, meek.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yes, Lord President. It kind of feels like we've met him a million times.
That's it. Yeah. And it annoys me when the doctor's like, oh, he's a friend of mine. We've never met him before.
No. I think he says it in that way of, I've just, you know, encountered this person. They're a friend of mine. That's
but I
kind
guess
of...
there must be some sort of history, because why would Damon give such a shit about some renegade arsehole like the Doctor?
Yeah, I mean, maybe... Oh, I
maybe they're like friends in the most loosest possible sense. Like, we went to a party.
We went to the same hermit halfway up a mountain.
Yeah,
we know each other through the hermit.
Oh, you know, we were all snorting whatever they snort on Gallifrey. The Rani was over there. The Master was doing whatever he was doing. The Meddling Monk was trying to win the lottery back in when at whatever time. He was trying to cook the books or whatever. And then, yeah, Damon was just there like, oh, all right.
Hello,
right.
Doctor.
Yeah.
Notice me.
Yeah, he's like, oh, Christ, not him again.
I like Gallifrey because it feels like it kind of grounds the Doctor again.
Yeah.
Whenever the Doctor gets a bit too big for their own boots, it's like, well, you are part of like a civilization.
Yeah.
And it kind of... I like the Doctor being sort of put back in their place and sort of, you know, no, you're a naughty Time Lord and gets the hand slapped and told off and like, well, you know, you've got to be answerable in some way.
Yeah.
You can't just be an omnipotent godlike figure, Stephen. so it's nice that we go back to Gallifrey every now and again and sort of...
Yeah.
It almost resets the Doctor
a little bit. And it feels like, you know, he can't really... this isn't something that he can really win.
Mm.
Because it's just like, no, the odds are against you.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you could probably do that in a much better way than how it is executed in this
story. Yeah, all the ideas and all of the set pieces and a lot of the plotting, I think, is actually quite good in this story. It's fine. You know, Johnny Byrne is not a bad Doctor Who writer.
No.
A safe pair of hands, not the most dynamic scripts in the world, but you get a solid beginning, middle and end and a couple of nice moments in there. Because there's a couple of nice bits of dialogue in Warriors of the Deep.
Yes.
Sorry, I try to forget that episode as much as I can. And in this,
I've had to watch it twice in 1 year.
Within months. How have you done it?
I know.
There's a nice bit of dialogue in this as well, I thought, when Hedin, because it's quite obviously Hedin from the beginning, speaks to Omega and says, you know, it was something about we owe you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's...
We owe to you.
And it's like, that's a great bit of dialogue.
And
the maniacal side of it doesn't quite... Like, it would have been cooler to see this almost like religious...
Yeah.
Like, well, he is our creator. You know, we would be nothing without him. And there is a little bit of that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, should we talk about Omega?
Let's talk about Omega. I mean... He's a lot more grounded in this story than he is perhaps in The Three Doctors, because in The Three Doctors he's very shouty. Mm-hmm. I think Stephen Thorne is fantastic in The Three Doctors.
Yeah.
He's fantastic.
And Ian Colley is great in this, but I don't think he's a patch on Stephen Thorne's. They're doing something different.
They're doing something very different. Have you heard Omega, the audio?
No, but he plays Omega in that.
That is fantastic.
Mm.
And it kind of adds a bit more to this.
Okay.
And it adds a lot more to Omega's character.
Okay.
I highly recommend it. It's really good. And there's a fantastic cliffhanger in it, which I won't spoil, but the first time I heard it, I was like, holy shit, what a cliffhanger.
Ah.
It's really good.
All right.
So it's worth a listen to, and it really gets into the history of like who Omega was, or perhaps who he was back when he was on Gallifrey, and the lead up to the accident that caused him to be trapped in a black hole. But yeah, in this, I think he's an interesting character. He's a great tragic character.
Mm, mm.
And I think that's when baddies work well, is when there's that slight tinge of tragedy to them.
And they can't see that.
They just can't handle it. Yeah. You know, Shara's Jack, is the same. He's actually like a great guy, but his face got fucked and he ended up living in the caves with androids and his mindset.
And the Master's kind of the same. The Master is always... trying.
Yeah.
Either too hard or not enough.
Yeah.
But, and that's kind of what makes them evil. But
yeah.
There is that kind of layer of, I wish I could be
yeah.
normal.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, you get that in The Three Doctors, don't you? The tragedy of, you know... And it's horrible because, you know, the Doctor sees him as a hero. Never meet your heroes, kids, because they might turn out to be lunatics like Umaga.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, yeah, that terrible reveal when he's like, you don't even exist anymore. You're just you're just willing yourself into being.
Yeah.
And then we've got the redesign in this. Yeah, what do you think of that?
I like the lights moving
when he
talks.
Yeah.
But you can only really see it when he's negative.
It really shows up then.
And it looks really good.
Yeah.
I was kind of... Because I forgot that he takes his head off and Peter Davison's underneath it at the end.
Yeah.
I forgot how that worked. But I was watching it thinking, well, the last time we saw Omega, they didn't have a head.
Yeah.
So is this, but I was like, is this supposed to be armor? Or is
this
their actual being?
This is exactly the thing I was going to ask you. Like,
because the way that he leaks all that goo,
yeah,
it's
that
like,
makes
well,
it
that
feel...
looks like blood. You
yeah.
know? So I guess he kind of, that is his being.
Yeah. Is yeah. he like, because I guess like the Urgon or the Gel Guards are, you know, antimatter creations.
Mm.
So yeah, is his head just some sort of massive whatever the hell that is
yeah,
that he's just conjured up in his like leather gimp gear?
Yeah, I think his outfit looks dope. It looks really cool.
It's good. And it still survives. You
can
see it in Liverpool.
You can. The Urgon.
Yeah, the Urgon.
Not
one of Doctor Who's greatest monsters.
Technically, I think looks really cool.
He looks amazing.
Yeah, the
it's a great design.
Outfit
yeah.
is great, but that head...
Yeah.
Any other, give him literally any other head. It's the chicken head just kills it. And it doesn't, you know, I think, is it Roger Lim who did the music for this?
I hate the score.
Yeah. And when the Urgon comes out to that, it's like, you're setting this thing up to fail, lads. Like, this is not.
Yeah.
How does anybody looking at that and going, oh, it's really scary. But then again,
especially when Peter has that scuffle with
it. I know. And it's like, oh my, oh yeah. It doesn't work, but technically is actually quite
cool. It's a great bit of design.
Yeah.
You know, it's like something you'd expect to see in something like Castlevania. Like a, you know, that kind of like a demonic sort of monster.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just unfortunately the costume just doesn't work on a practical level. Had it perhaps been shot in low lighting and in a different way, maybe they could have reinforced the head so it didn't friggin'
wobble around
when
place.
You moved.
And you can see the pinholes in the neck.
Yeah, you can
see,
you're like.
Why does Omega need Colin to do all of his bidding? Colin being Tegan's cousin, when he's got the Urgon there?
I don't know.
Maybe he likes having a young lad around just to do the housework.
It's really interesting. Like I've always thought this, and it's kind of been, I guess this is a reading that many other people have had, because Jay from We Are Cults shared an article with us the other day.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because they'd written a thing about this story.
Mm.
Colin and his friend, Robin? Is it Colin and Robin?
Yeah.
Are they gay?
I don't know.
I've always got the impression that they're gay because
I get the impression
there's a gay reading to it. I'm sure.
I get the impression that Colin is just doesn't really like Robin
because
they don't seem like the kind of people that would hang out with. Robin's very kind of like stern and takes things really like seriously, and you know only has that one expression on his face. And Colin just seems like pretty free and easy and carefree.
Yeah.
But then again, he is kind of against sleeping in the crypt.
Yeah.
So he's. He is a bit of a square man.
Yeah.
I do like their whole setup though.
Yeah.
I like the shooting it in Amsterdam and making it about two students going backpacking.
Yeah.
And finding accommodation that they don't have to pay for, but they might get arrested for.
Yeah.
It feels really real.
Yeah, yeah.
And it adds a layer that doesn't need to be there, but then, you know, it's a helpful link when you have to go and find information from the hostel they never checked into. It just kind of it gives it. A basis in reality.
And I think that's what's quite fun about this story is you see all those disparaging elements of like, right, so we've got this weird creature, we've got stuff going on Gallifrey, then stuff with the Doctor in the TARDIS, and, you know, Omega, which obviously we don't know it's Omega until part three, unless you're not an idiot and you worked it out ages ago. But, and then you sort of watch it and you think, and then you've got this stuff in Amsterdam, like, how do all these disparaging elements seemingly fit together?
They kind of work, though.
Yeah.
I think that's because Doctor Who is the only show that can get away with having all of those elements in separate places, and yet it's still all being part of the same story in the same whole.
I think if you tried to do this for any other drama, a script editor would just be like, what on earth are you talking about?
Why are
about?
We all over the place with all this sort of stuff? A couple of Omega moments. What do we think of the whole music box bit with the little kids?
That's really cool. That's a sweet moment. I like that.
I kind of watched it initially and I thought, I don't quite get what they're going for until you're like, because I get that he's desperate for a physical form in this universe. Mm. But I think if you'd had a performer like Stephen Thorne, that maniacal, desperate, I will do anything to be out of this universe, this universe of antimatter, would sell it more. But I think you can miss that reading that he's like, maybe I'm a good person, and maybe I'm, you know, he's enjoying the sensory aspects of being alive. Yeah. It would have been nice to have a few more. Maybe he goes down the red light district. He's like, well, now I'm here and I'm in person. You know,
that was the real reason Omega chose Amsterdam.
That's why his skin started flaking off. He caught something.
oh my god!
Yeah,
makes sense.
It's a nice little. It's a nice little scene.
It is a nice scene.
What do we think about Peter Davison suddenly not being Omega and Ian Collier running around?
Yeah, it's so obvious, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, they've given him the same haircut, but it's the colour just doesn't quite match.
It looks like Wurzel Gummidge's hair. It's like straw.
Yeah, bless him. And they just cover him in Rice Krispies and paint him green, don't they?
It's not like there's enough prosthetic to make it look obviously like...
Yeah.
The prosthetic is the actor's face or, you know, whatever. Like,
yeah.
It's not like a go-between like The Watcher or whatever. It's clearly a different actor with a different frame and a different build.
Yeah, perhaps if they'd have done something more to disguise the fact that it was him, you know, distorted his face more. A bit like more Magnus Grille, sort of like his face was like melting
melty,
a bit.
You
could have probably gotten away with it, but I guess time constraints, especially doing it on location, I guess didn't allow for that.
There's a lot of collusion on Gallifrey.
Yeah.
We have a villain on Gallifrey,
Hedin,
who... I don't know if it's because we're watching it. I mean, I watched it on BritBox, so it's the DVD transfer. It's not HD. It's good picture quality. Mm. But you can see the colour of his collar the whole way through. It's clearly the purple one, you know?
And you just hear his voice. I mean, I know they've manipulated it.
A little bit, but it's like in this diction and his sibilance of certain words. It's like, that's clearly Hedin.
Yeah. Yeah, Michael Goff has a very particular way of speaking.
Very much so.
But,
you know, it's sort of like they so desperately want people at home to telegraph it's the Castellan.
Yeah.
Because it's always the Castellan that has the last conversation with Maxil and wanders off. Then you get a scene with Maxil doing his thing.
Yeah.
And then the next scene is always Hedin talking to Omega.
Yeah.
So they're obviously trying to steer it in a particular direction. But, I mean, was it Michael Goff? His hand acting is
It's
off
good.
The charts.
Yeah,
man.
Twiddling that thing.
Yeah.
That's really cool. That's good. I like that.
But there's a bit right at the end where you kind of feel like he's running out of things that, like, I've done this sort of thing with it already. So then he just starts doing this and talking with his hands like that. And it's like, okay, all right. But he's, you know, he's great.
He's very good. He's very good in it.
He's very, you know, he's got an apathy to him. You know, like a, you know, I can trust you. You're a kind of cuddly old dude.
Yeah.
And then he's obviously a bad.
Yeah. It's a shame that when Barusa turns around to him, he's like, why are you doing this? There's no time to explain that now.
Yeah.
And it's never explained.
It's never explained.
It's like, and then it goes back to this thing that you were saying, like, you know, it's a shame that there's not more of like a, you know, is there some sort of like almost like a religious zealot type of thing?
Yeah, like the cult of Omega.
Yeah,
like, we all rejected him.
Yeah,
he gave
us
this power of time travel. And it's alluded to, and there's a couple of lines, but, you know, it's not like there's enough.
I actually kind of almost wrote a comic book that had that in.
Ooh.
Yeah, it didn't happen, unfortunately.
Was that for the same one that you did the Cyberman?
It was the same one that we did the Cyberman one, yeah. And it was going to be a whole thing with Cult of Omega.
That'd
and
been cool.
Uprising against Rassilon.
Cool. Maybe he can do it with some action figures, folks. He's quite good at that, apparently.
Yeah, that'd be good.
What should we move on to next? Should we talk a bit more about the story or the Doctor? Or
I want to go back to Robin.
Okay.
Because is he the third member of Mulligan and O'Hare?
Why?
Because he sort of talks like this. He's got a bit of a thing. So, yeah. Oh dear.
I don't like the bit where
look, at least take your boots off. See, yeah. There's stuff like that. You're not going to sleep like that, are you? At least take your boots off.
This is where the gay reading comes from. Tegan.
Tegan's back. It's a nice hook to do the kind of, she's been away for a bit and then come back. She's kind of shaken off the fact that you're your companion gimmick is that you're an air hostess.
Yeah.
And she's just kind of a person.
Yeah.
You know, that's quite nice.
Yeah, it's good. You know, it gives us... Is she the companion of classic Doctor Who that we see more of her family than any other Doctor Who companion at that time?
At that time?
Because there's Auntie Vanessa and her cousin Colin. Mm-hmm. All the other... I guess we hear about... Auntie Lavinia Smith, Sarah Jane. We know about Joe Grant's uncle,
Who got her into.
Who got her in? Obviously, Ace. We know about her mum, and you know we meet her grandmother.
There aren't many others.
I don't think anyone else.
No.
The Brigadier's wife.
Yeah, true. And that's daughter.
But we don't know about the daughter in classic Doctor Who,
unless you count downtime.
It's a good in.
It's a good hook for the start of the season.
And I like the stuff with Nyssa and the Doctor at the start. You do get the feeling that they've been travelling just the two of them for a while.
And they've spent all their time just fixing the TARDIS.
Oh no, they've been doing good things. Like they were in a much better story called Spare Parts.
They were, in between. Maybe it's just this thing I've just got. I don't like the Fifth Doctor. Mm. Or not dislike the Fifth Doctor, but he's my least favourite. That Nyssa would rather spend her time on board the TARDIS sort of fixing it and doing chores. She doesn't have a spirit of adventure to her. No. You know? She's just a bit beige.
Yeah.
You know, like, she doesn't have that get up and go. Yeah. At least Tegan's got some piss and vinegar, you know, like...
See, Mau, I agree, but I do think she's really good in this story.
In this story.
Later on.
And Sarah Sutton is fantastic in all her Doctor Whos.
Yeah.
But it's like, this is the first story she actually does anything, really. Yeah. And, you know, she's given a lot of action.
Yeah.
Obviously, Josh Nares is very happy with the gun.
Yeah.
Popping up every, you know, 15 seconds, she's wielding another gun at somebody and shooting someone.
Yeah, she's bloody trigger happy, isn't she?
She
shoots that soldier.
She does.
First thing she does, I'm going to go for that gun.
Bang.
Like, come on, Nyssa.
But yeah, she is given a bit more agency in this story. It's, but then again, immediately Tegan comes back into the fray and it's like, well, it would be nice to have got a television adventure with just the Fifth Doctor and Nyssa.
Just the two of them. And again, I mean, like, this is the trouble. I mean, you can with old Doctor Who, is that obviously there's not enough time to explore all these elements of the characters and all this kind of stuff. But we can put things upon them after the fact. But I mean, for Nyssa, you've got to think, everyone that she's ever known is bloody dead. Mm. Adric's just died as well. Mm. Tegan's buggered off. If the Doctor dies...
Maybe she was trying to off them, so she just got the Fifth Doctor all to herself.
Maybe. So, I like her motivation, but it's not... Mm. None of this stuff is sort of said, but I think you've got to infer it afterwards.
It's helpful, I think, for this period of Doctor Who and for many other periods of Doctor Who that we have Big Finish.
Yeah.
To sort of put some more meat on the bones.
Yes.
But because I don't interact with a lot of that stuff generally... I mean, I've listened to Spare Parts, I've listened to lots of audio dramas where it's just the Fifth Doctor and Nyssa. I still just watch it as it is, and I don't get an awful lot from it. I don't get an awful lot from them.
Yeah.
I enjoy her in the story. It does feel like it feels like a season finale.
Yeah.
This would have been much better than Time Flight. Well, I mean, obviously. but it has like a season finale feel. We're on Gallifrey.
Yeah.
You know, the Doctor is sentenced to death. Twice, killed once, stasered once.
Yeah.
I mean, those cliffhangers don't really do anything for me. Whenever the Doctor's shot in parts one and two, it's like, oh no, what's going to happen for the next 24 weeks or whatever it is?
Yeah,
Like, the Doctor's not in it anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, those are always a bit of a cop-out. I guess the one where he's atomized.
Yeah.
That's quite a good one, because he is gone. You know, Nyssa's crying. She's got tears rolling down her face.
Yeah.
You know, proper emotion going on there.
Really?
For old Doctor Who. The cliffhangers aren't great.
You get the
episode three.
Omega
is a
has control of the Matrix.
Yeah, which means absolutely nothing to anybody.
Omega floating across the screen like a Windows screensaver.
Yeah, it really is.
That Matrix, that whole Matrix section. I think this is the other thing with the Fifth Doctor in this story, is fixing the TARDIS.
Yeah.
Running around Gallifrey.
Yeah.
Getting stasered, getting locked in Nissa's bedroom and getting one last lung full of her drawers before he gets off. And then putting the Matrix for half of part three and a bit of part four and then chasing himself around Amsterdam. It's like there's action, but there's not an awful lot of stuff to it. You know, like most of the Fifth Doctor's lines are like, there's no time. We've got to run over here now. And that's sort of
No, I know what you mean.
Which is fine because it keeps the story going. But what's he doing? What's he saying? There's not an awful lot
there. And there's, you almost wish that there was a bit more between him and Omega.
Yeah.
With the realisation that, it is Omega. You know, because John's got those fantastic, great scenes with him. He talks about him, you know, you're my boyhood hero and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And this is, that's sort of all glossed over.
I think one of the problems is that it feels very padded, this story.
Yeah.
And I think one of the issues with that, and one of the consequences of that, is that you get a lot of Time Lords referring to Omega as the creature.
Yeah.
When it's been established in part one that this is a creature from the universe of antimatter.
Of antimatter.
And none of them go, he sounds, did anybody else?
Yeah.
It's a bit fishy. Yeah. Sound a bit like Omega.
I said this to Johnny. I was like, well, surely everyone would know because of that. It's like, it's going to be one of two things. It's going to be either the antimatter monster from Zeta Minor from Planet of Evil. Doubt is him.
No.
Or Omega.
Exactly.
Who else is going to have beef with the Time Lord?
Exactly. And be manipulating things from behind the scenes.
He's like, come on, you
and
idiots.
I think the other thing as well is that, and maybe this plays into the, maybe it's a commentary on bureaucracy, because we seem to just go round and round in circles with the Time Lords.
Yeah.
And the Doctor's biodata and
stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the Doctor's biodata is extracted from the Matrix.
Yeah.
That is established. That is made very clear from part one. And the Time Lords go, well, it couldn't possibly be us, because none of us would be so evil to do that.
It's like,
okay, but the logical conclusion is that one of you has done it.
Yeah.
And you're all aware that it was the Doctor's biodata and it was taken.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah, it can only be the members of the High Council.
Exactly. Then Damon takes the Doctor's biodata, rolls it up and gives it to him.
Yeah.
And sneaks it on board the TARDIS. The Doctor opens it and goes, my biodata.
Right? Yeah.
It's like, yeah. And then there's a bit where the Castellan goes to, it must be in part three. So we're even in part three now and we're still doing this bloody game. He says to Maxil, go and check the Doctor's biodata. He goes in and he goes, it definitely came from Gallifrey. no shit. Like, obviously, like, unless they, and I don't think it's trying to do this, unless it's doing like a whole, well, we need evidence to prove it beyond all reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
But you've all proved beyond all reasonable doubt that it was one of you.
Yeah.
You just don't want to admit to it, and the Doctor's the scapegoat.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting kind of
concept,
but it doesn't get sold like that, and it doesn't come across in that way, you know?
No.
And so you feel like we're just same corridors, up and down, locked in that room, locked in this room, taken to the chamber, taken to another bloody chamber. It's just, you know, that is where this story, I think, it gets its reputation for being boring.
Yeah.
Because it's lots of walking up and down empty corridors.
Yes.
You know, and passing notes and collusion and whispering and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And I get that isn't everybody's cup of tea, but I like the idea that Gallifrey is steeped in.
Yeah.
You know.
Everyone's a shithead.
Yeah, the corridors of power.
Yeah.
Like, the decisions are not made in that room. They're made in the corridors outside that room,
yes,
being whispered to and passing notes and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I like that. But, I mean, there's nobody in those corridors to pass notes to. It's bloody deserted.
No, they're all in that bar.
They're all at the piss.
It's like the BBC bar. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's a commentary on the
on the BBC. Yes, Doctor Who's very popular and it gets the viewing figures, but we're going to cancel it anyway because they spend the money elsewhere.
Yeah, anything else? Of course, the big one that we haven't talked about, Colin Baker.
Colin Baker is Maxil, but he isn't. He's the Sixth Doctor, and I can't watch this story without going, it's just the Sixth Doctor.
Really?
I can't disassociate.
Yeah, it's
But
hard,
he's great in it.
He's very good.
And you can see how good an actor he is, because it's like, that is certainly not what he does with the Sixth Doctor.
Yes.
But I can't.
He feels a bit wasted, really.
Yeah.
It feels like
he's one of the best actors
more.
In
yeah.
it. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's Colin always gives that anecdote about, oh, you know, it was the Commander Maxil show. You know, that's what he was told to, you know, tone it down a bit.
Yeah.
I really want to see that version where he was like, he really felt like he was the star of the show.
I feel like he would have taken one look at that outfit and gone, all right, that's a bit too busy. Maybe I need to calm myself down. Otherwise, I am literally just going to be the only thing visible in this shot.
Yeah.
In this two shot. It's just going to be people staring at me in this chicken head that I've got. I like this. There's a couple of bits I want to talk about with Amsterdam.
Yeah.
There's a really nice bit. And again, you're like, oh, this is the era with no sonic screwdriver.
Yes.
So the doctor's got that device that measures the Omega's transference.
Yeah.
And Nyssa says something like, well, can it lead us to him? And the doctor goes, it's not as simple as that. And it's like, yes! Yeah. They have to try and figure out a way to get to Omega.
Yeah.
There's no GPS. He doesn't wave a sonic around and go, over there somewhere.
Yeah.
And they have to look through a telephone directory and go to a hostel and ask questions. And there's another bit, which I feel like is, it's probably not a reference, but I feel like they're kind of in the same ballpark, where he empties his pockets out.
Yeah.
And he hasn't got any change. He's got his hat, a cricket ball, some string, and like a bolt or something. And it's like, well, no, that's, you know, it adds a lot more weight to the story and a lot more intrigue. Because you're like, but he hasn't got this thing that can just fix all these problems.
Yeah, even when they get first transported to Gallifrey and they're in the security centre or whatever they call it, and he's trying to open the door, you know, he's there fiddling around with it, and then the door's open, but that's because Damon's done it. And even he says, oh, no, this isn't me, someone else.
That bit falls pretty flat, I think.
Yeah?
That bit where he's going... code.
Oh yeah, that bit.
It's like, oh my god, can you just get on with it? And then he opens the door and he goes, it was just luck. And it's like, what's the gag?
Yeah, but now we've got that gif of when he does that with the rainbow and it's like, no fucks given.
Oh, true. Fair enough.
It was worth it.
It was worth it for a gif. Yeah.
And it's interesting, in hindsight, this story, you know, they head in, tries to pin it on Barusa. It's like, oh, Barusa's the traitor.
Yeah.
Few stories later, Barusa is the traitor.
Yeah,
I like to think that maybe Barusa has already got his time scoop plan in action.
Yeah,
and he's thinking, "Fuck me!
Yeah.
Someone's caught me out. I've not even started yet."
It was supposed to start on Monday. Bollocks! I've got to push this back now. God, that's going to mess up all my plans.
I haven't finished painting my five doctor's models.
That'd be great if somebody can edit some like paint marks on his long robes and his sleeve. That'd be brilliant. Shooting it in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
This is one thing that I really think John got so right as his time as producer, is it gives the illusion, shooting abroad, that there's more money than there actually is. And I'm sure it's subsidised in some way, either by a local TV company or it's actually cheaper just to shoot it there for a lot of different reasons or whatever. But it does give the, you know, Paris, Amsterdam... Seville, it gives the illusion that there's more money than there actually is. And it's just kind of nice that it's not central London again.
Yeah.
Or another sleepy English village.
Yeah, it just makes it feel a bit bigger, doesn't it?
It does. The only thing I get... Oh, Lanzarote is the other one, obviously. Yeah. But they're very old people, touristy place. It's where the English holiday when they want to go to Europe.
You wanted them to film in the red light district, didn't you?
Well, I was thinking if they got too lost and had to wander into a coffee shop and they go, well, you know, we're all a bit lost here, you know. You can sit down, have a brownie, and then nothing ever gets solved.
Smoking
and
a pancake.
And yeah, it's just I love it.
Oh, someone
just
could have
them
been like,
bumbling around.
Yeah, doctor, you like the herb, I can see you.
It's good to smoke, we roll it up. And they just, an edit of that story, but everybody's got really red eyes.
Yeah.
Would be brilliant. And they're just bumbling around, bumping into people.
Well, Umaga already
that guy's
is.
Shopping.
Umaga, that's it. Umaga just went to the wrong cafe and just came out off his tits.
No wonder he turned green. My God. This is something I need to ask you, if you can help me with this. So, in the crypt.
Yeah.
We hear a TARDIS materialise.
Yeah.
And then there's that archway and then the door opens and then, you know,
wah, 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 wah.
And chicken heads, you know, comes out. And then there's a couple of back and forths where people go in and out. But the one that I was like, I want to see somebody go in and then the next scene be where Omega is. So he says he's in a different universe or he's somewhere else. He's contacting the Doctor through the Matrix.
Yeah.
He's whole, he needs to have a body for transference.
Yeah.
But he's in the TARDIS, in the crypt.
Yeah.
In the chair.
Yeah.
It's like, so is that supposed to be a different universe? Is it white because you're going into a different universe, into the universe of antimatter?
Well, I think this is what the Arc of Infinity is all about.
Right.
The actual Arc of Infinity. Mm-hmm. That something about it allows antimatter and matter to exist.
So the Arc of Infinity is in the TARDIS.
Well, I don't know. I think it's a bit more of a nebulous concept than that. I don't actually know. And no. I've always thought to myself, how does he get a TARDIS? And how does he exist in Amsterdam in any sort of form? But I believe that is how it... That is the get around.
Okay.
Is that he has found the Arc of Infinity, which can allow... Is this little... Oh, I guess it's like a little bubble of time and space where he can... manipulate
exist
it and it
exists space.
In that space.
Okay. Okay.
I could be completely wrong.
That just threw me off. Is all.
Yeah, no, and every time I always think this because it's that sort of 80s Doctor Who techno babble waffle.
But it's like you go into a TARDIS and the next scene has Wrangles.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you're there though. You're in that space. So that's always just
so confusing. That's always confusing. And I mean, the stuff with I think it's called the fusion generator that Colin plugs into the
neck brace.
Yeah, like the neck brace that gets plugged into the pumps.
Yeah.
I'm always like, well, what the, why? But apparently something to do with it, because Amsterdam is below sea level.
So the pressure is the only thing that can get the fusion generator to work. Yeah.
If you stop those pumps, Amsterdam would just float away.
Maybe he's just been on the wacky
backy. He sounds like it. Is that the Arc of Infinity? What do we think is a kind of summary? Like,
it's all right. It's fine. I don't get the hatred for it.
No,
I mean, it has its shortcomings.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's that bad.
No. And I think if you like 80s Doctor Who, it's sort of an above average story for that period in time. For me, it certainly is because I'm not a massive fan of that period. It's like, that was quite good. But I just always feel like when I watch a Fifth Doctor story, it's like he feels absent. The character of the Doctor kind of feels absent. Mm. I don't know if there's anybody else that kind of gets that with the Fifth Doctor.
No, but I know what you mean. I guess he's slightly more passive, perhaps.
I don't need my Doctor to be knocking people out or whatever, but it's just like he feels like as much of a passenger in his stories as his companions.
Yeah.
And I
he doesn't take charge in the same way that, like, John's Doctor
or
even Tom's, you know. Or Colin's. You know, and that's a Doctor that, you know... that's a Doctor that the script editor practically writes him out of his own programme.
Exactly.
But, you know, something about him, I guess he's just got such a big personality and he's obviously got such a big
coat.
Yeah.
It helps. Yeah, it amplifies it, doesn't it? Right. Yeah, and I think it's just, his outfit's beige. And it's just...
Yeah. And I guess the Gallifrey looks, like you said, that almost feels a bit beige.
Yeah.
You know, it's not grandiose in the way that we've seen Gallifrey before.
No.
It's just, all right, well, we've got the sound effects and we've got the old
costumes.
We've
got the stasers.
Yeah.
We've got all the old outfits, for the guards.
And it's a shame they didn't go, well, let's look at the Deadly Assassin and see, okay, we have these nice green doors and we've got the Panopticon, all these sets.
And I think you get the impression that Johnny Byrne, you know, he hasn't been given necessarily the three Doctors to watch.
Yeah.
Because I think if he had, you would get more of Omega being a megalomaniac and his obsession with being real. And you get that with the fairground music box scene, but it's not, you know, that telegraphed. And I think you would have had the Time Lords take it a lot more seriously and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, hey-ho, you know, it's a very passable episode of Doctor Who.
I mean, and it says a lot about the Time Lords, doesn't it? That we don't know how to sort this problem out, but if we kill the Doctor,
then
everything's
fine. Then
it's
not our problem anymore.
Yeah, so...
So and they have to kill him because he's half-bonded and the Doctor is sort of like his entry point into our reality.
Yeah. I mean, does Omega choose the Doctor's biodata because... as like some sort of a revenge thing, you know?
You could do a Cartmel master plan and go, well, because we are both Time Lords of high rank or Time Lord gods, we are the first.
Yeah.
It could only have been Rassilon,
who
is in a tomb and might get woken up soon, apparently. I've heard some rumours.
Yeah.
And you.
Yeah.
And that's sort of it. And Tektayun.
I mean, you know, otherwise you'd just be like, well, surely you just get some like menial Joe Blogs.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's just like the lavatory attendant or
Damon, yeah, like
or Damon, yeah.
Anybody you can do a transfer with. Yeah. I thought it was funny as well. Like a couple of, you know, Gallifrey soldiers either get stazed. I think most of them get up in the end. But like Barusa, when Barusa's shot and dies, there's no regeneration.
Hedin, you mean?
Hedin. No, yeah. Well, Barusa. No, no, Hedin. Yeah, you're right. The Barusa doesn't get offed. Yeah, like when Hedin dies, yeah. It's like there's no regeneration. But then I guess it's lucky that every Time Lord that dies in this story was on their last life.
Yeah, yeah.
So you don't have to get another actor in to do the regeneration.
Well, they've got the impulse laser, haven't they, in the beginning? That's what Hedin uses to kill that guy.
And an impulse laser just does a Time
Lord
in. Well,
I assume so. Ah. It's really interesting when he comes in and he goes, ah, good evening. Impulse laser?
Headshot.
Yeah. You know, like, if you pointed a gun at me, Billy, I wouldn't be like, oh, Beretta?
Yeah, Walther PP. You know, yeah, exactly.
But hey-ho.
Hey-ho.
It's fine.
It's fine, yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah.
It's all right. How does the Fifth Doctor know what an Urgon is? He's like, oh, it's an Urgon.
It's an Urgon.
One of Omega's shittier attempts at psychos. Synthesis.
Maybe he was like, at one point Omega was like, I've been thinking about this design for this thing. It looks like a fucking chicken. That's rubbish. Yeah, that's rubbish. Well, it's better than the
so
lobby.
Brother Time Lord, what do you think of this? Well, I think that's pretty appalling. Right?
It looks, looks like a chicken, sir.
What? I'll just rustle one up for you with my powers of will. I can do a door. I'll do a chicken for you.
He's good, the Doctor. He helps him out with that. Maybe the Doctor was like, I tell you what, Omega, what would look really scary is this chicken. Okay, I'll trust you, Brother Time Lord. I trust that you're not lying to me. You won't deceive me again. There you go. Well, that was the Arc of Infinity.
Yeah.
It's so okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just fine.
Yeah.
I mean, when you consider that Time Flight was the story that came before.
Wow, I know.
Anything is better than that.
I've been thinking maybe Time Flight should be coming up on our agenda quite soon. Because we have been doing the review of Death now for a year. It'll be a year next week as of this episode coming out.
As a podcast.
As a podcast, yeah. Which is crazy. We shot the first one a couple of days ago, a year ago.
Bonkers. How exciting it all was.
I know.
How new and exciting it
was. Sick of it now. but thank you all so much for your support over the last year.
Thank you.
We wouldn't have been doing it and keeping it up and enjoying it as much if you guys weren't enjoying it either. So massive thanks for everybody who listens to it on their commute. That's my favourite thing when I see people say, I've got a long drive or I've got a whatever and I'm listening to the podcast. Yeah. And it's like,
shit, don't listen to us on a long drive.
No, especially not with kids in the car.
No, shit.
And people who obviously watch us on YouTube as well, thank you so much and your support and sharing it around and all that good stuff. We've got some cool stuff hopefully coming up, maybe like a kind of a live-ish review of Death from within the studio.
Yeah.
We'll get some more details on that soon.
Yeah.
More interviews, more reviews, more good stuff. So yeah, thank you very much everybody for your support over the last 12 months.
And good times for Review of Death. We've got lots of new Doctor Who to talk about.
Lots of new Doctor Who coming up. Maybe by the next time we see each other, we'll have a title. If not, we'll moan about it for another 15 minutes, I'm sure.
Yeah.
We'll keep on keeping on. Yeah. Look out for a new poll. We'll have a new episode to have a look at. I think I might chuck Curse of the Black Spot in there again, because I do fancy watching that.
Do you?
For some reason, I just thought...
Why, are you sadist?
Well, I think it's because I can do a crap modern Who, because it's 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And
they're easier to watch.
Yeah. And we've ragged on Series 6 a lot. And I feel like, you know, we've done Closing Time. That was Series 6, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that was shite.
And that wasn't great. But I feel like the more that we can kind of put our case forward...
Justify
our hatred by watching the worst ones from that series. I think we should do Curse of the Black Spot. What's your favourite Series 6 episode? Is there a good one in there?
Yeah, the first ones are good.
Oh, the
Impossible
Astronaut Day of the Moon.
That's good.
The Girl Who Waited, is that Series 6?
Now, do you know what? Everyone raves about that story, and I've never got it.
Well, maybe we'll do a Series 6 double bill. We could do...
Go, Craigie.
Well, let's split it up across two episodes. I won't put us through two Series 6 episodes
We could do. I mean, it's only two 45-minute episodes to watch. That's
true. Well, let us know what you fancy seeing, everybody.
If you fancy us doing a double whammy of Series 6 shitness.
A turd sandwich, then we'll do it for you. We'll make it so.
Yeah. See you next time.
See you next time.
Goodbye. He's not in this story. I don't know why I did his voice.
You just do it. It's like a tick.
Yeah.
Like when you laugh sometimes, there's a Tom grin that appears in your face.